Seabury Resources for Aging is a proud partner of Aging Matters. As a nonprofit, Seabury serves older adults in the Washington, D.C. region and across the United States with its care management model to support caregivers and their loved ones. Seabury is a pioneer in the field of services for older adults, providing affordable housing and support services to help older adults age in place. For more information, visit their website, seaburyresources.org, or call them at 202-289-5690. Hello and welcome to Aging Matters, a program featuring aging-related topics of interest to older adults and their families. I'm Cheryl Beversdorf, your host. As older adults retire and have more free time, travel is a major consideration. Preparing for a trip often takes extensive planning, and older travelers should know how to be ready and take precautions to ensure a smooth and hassle-free trip. My guest today is Emily Neighbors, Senior Program Specialist with the Center for Healthy Aging at the National Council on Aging. She is going to talk about the many issues older travelers should know and handle when planning a domestic or international trip. She'll also provide a to-do list of tips to keep in mind during the journey to ensure the experience is safe, fun, and memorable. So welcome, Emily, and thank you for joining me today.
Hi, Cheryl. Thanks so much for having me.
This is a fun time, you know, where it's summertime, it's warm outside, and it's a good time for older adults to travel. So let's start by giving us an overview. With older adults living longer and staying healthier, are more of them traveling or wanting to travel?
Yes, and it's actually been fairly consistent that when you look across ages, older adults are one of the largest groups that travel. We're not quite back to pre-pandemic numbers, but we're getting there. And people are feeling more comfortable just getting out to have new adventures and visit with their friends and family.
As they begin to think about that, of course, everybody's on social media now. Is it a good idea to publicize travel plans on social media and getting a little bit closer to home? What about hiring a house sitter while traveling? What do they know about the external aspects first of their travel plans?
It's natural to want to share your excitement about an upcoming trip, but it's smart to think twice before posting it on social media. There have been cases of people using social media to target homes when the owner announces that they're going on a trip and take advantage of that absence to potentially rob a home. So rather than sharing your excitement before you leave, take plenty of pictures and then you can share those with friends and family when you return. And you just want to make sure also that you have strict privacy settings enabled on your social media to make sure that only your closest friends see what you want to share. As you mentioned about a house sitter, that's a great idea to consider, asking a trusted friend or family member to house sit or just check in on your home while you're away.
And let's talk more about preparing, especially if someone is going overseas. Talk about passports. Should they be kept current? Should we be reminded already that maybe we need to see when it's going to expire? And also, I was wondering if there are certain countries where an extra visa might be necessary, what should listeners know about passports and visas and other legal information that we should know?
These are important things to think about, in some cases way in advance of your travels. Applying for and renewing passports can take a long time, up to 6 to 8 weeks. So if you're traveling outside of the U.S., many countries will not let you enter if your passport expires in less than 6 months. So you want to make sure that certainly that it has been renewed recently and that it won't be expiring anytime soon. And yes, you might need a visa to enter certain countries as well. There's a website called travel.state.gov. I'll probably mention it a few more times during our talk because it is a wealth of information. And it has a search feature that you can use where you can enter the name of any country and it will share specific passport and visa requirements for that country.
Let's take it one step further. I mean, there's so much chaos going on in the world right now. And if our older travelers are thinking of going to some places with a travel company, those companies probably have looked out already as to whether it's safe to go to those places. But if they decide they're going to set out on their own, talk about travel alerts or travel warnings. Are these important to look up? Where can we find out more information? There was something called the Smart Traveler Enrollment Program. Talk about that. What do our listeners need to know about what to expect and whether it's safe to go to some of these places now?
Travel alerts and travel warnings are important. And that program that you mentioned, Smart Traveler Enrollment Program, is a great resource for international travelers. It's a free service offered by the federal government that allows you to enroll your trip securely with the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate. And this will send you travel advisories and alerts, and it will help the embassy contact you in case of an emergency. And they can also help your family and friends reach you in an emergency as well. The website for this program is STEP. That's an abbreviation for the program. So STEP.state.gov/STEP. I actually was speaking with a colleague of mine who is an older gentleman and he travels. He just came back from Portugal. And he was not aware of the Smart Traveler Enrollment Program. So it's a great resource to check out.
Whatever country that one is traveling to, you can fill in the blanks, so to speak, on the website and then find out whether it's okay to go to that country or not.
It might not be on that program's website, but on the previous website that I shared, travel.state.gov. That has a search feature, and when you enter the name of the country you're visiting, it brings up a page that lists alerts that are current, and then it has a section about what you need to know for your passport and your visa and even vaccinations.
Okay, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later. Another aspect that is always on people's minds is the travel transportation. My husband and I have traveled with companies, and sometimes the expectation is you make your own travel arrangements. On the other hand, travel transportation is made by a travel company. Any thoughts about the pros and cons of each in terms of making your own flight reservations versus having a travel company? Do they get special dibs or something and special deals? What's important information about that aspect of the trip?
Certainly, it's a personal choice, but travel advisors have a wealth of knowledge, and like you said, they can find discounts, secure tickets and reservations, and they can also offer local knowledge and help troubleshoot if problems come up. That said, depending on your plans, it may be less expensive and make more sense to plan your own trip. If it's very straightforward or if it's a domestic trip. But if you want to explore travel companies, they can definitely offer some information that you might not know and discounts, like you said, and ways to save money. So definitely do your research to find a reputable one. There's a list of verified travel advisors on the American Society of Travel Advisors website. And that's www.asta.org.
And talking about the whole aspect of travel, things come up sometimes and you got to cancel a trip. So talk about travel insurance. What do we need to know?
Travel insurance can provide different types of coverage. So this could include costs due to trip delays and cancellations, baggage problems, and medical coverage if you get sick or injured on your trip. Travel insurance can also include a 24/7 travel assistance line that could help you find a pharmacy or help with language translation, replacing a lost passport, and more. Your decision to buy travel insurance might depend on, again, on whether your travels are domestic or international, if you have lots of prepaid non-refundable deposits, or if you just want to have protection in unforeseen circumstances. But I think the most important thing to keep in mind is your healthcare coverage. Medicare will cover hospital care and doctor visits across the U.S., and some Medicare Advantage plans will provide state-to-state coverage as well. But in almost all cases, Medicare will not pay for healthcare or prescription medications while you're traveling outside of the U.S. And some Medicare Advantage plans offer benefits for emergency and urgent care services during foreign travel, but you should check with your plan. Travel medical insurance can provide healthcare coverage while you travel and pay for ambulance services, doctor and hospital bills, and other medical expenses. So that's something important that people should consider, especially if traveling internationally.
And it sounds, Emily, that there's different types of travel insurance as well. Some I'm hearing you talk about are more related to one's personal health as opposed to the possibility of you might just cancel your trip altogether. Is that correct?
That is correct. There are different kinds with different policies and levels of coverage or protection. So you do want to do your research, and you could consult the American Automobile Association, also known as AAA, or AARP can have resources on these topics as well. But yes, it's important to explore all the options and see what would be best for you.
And now we're ready to get on this trip here. But another aspect that one often hears about is carrying copies of important documents. What are we talking about here in terms of important documents? What are examples? And what about emergency contact information? And as we carry these documents, where should we carry these documents?
All of us hope to avoid these potential scenarios while we're traveling, but it can happen. And if it does, you definitely want to be prepared. So keeping important documents on hand in case you lose your passport or need an additional form of identification or experience an emergency, this is important. Before leaving home, you should make copies of your important documents. These include your passport, driver's license, Medicare card, and even your itinerary. You want to pack an extra set with you and keep it separate from the originals. And then make sure to also leave copies with people you trust at home. This way, if you lose your ID or if it's stolen, this will make it easier to get replacements. And yes, it's also important to carry emergency contact information and identification on you while you're out and about. If a medical emergency happens, the people helping you will need to know your emergency contact and a healthcare provider information at home.
In terms of important documents, and we're going to talk about money in a moment, but insofar as making a copy of the credit cards that you are carrying in the outside chance, and we hope that doesn't happen, somebody's wallet is stolen or a purse is stolen and everything is gone, is it also a good idea to make a copy of those credit cards as well?
Credit card fraud is common in tourist destinations, and certainly theft can happen as well. If you are bringing your credit card, you definitely want to call the credit card issuer before your trip to let them know where and when you're traveling. Make sure that they don't freeze or turn off your credit card deactivated in the case of fraud or in the case that you use it and they weren't aware. But if something like what you described happens, yes, it is smart to take a backup card just in case, especially in case your credit card were to get frozen or deactivated because of one of those scenarios.
In recent overseas travel that I've experienced, it was important to just give the credit card companies a quick call to let them know, because they are watching very vigilantly. And if they suddenly see purchases or whatever occurring in another country, and this is not the usual pattern of use for this credit card, they are more likely to be suspicious and try to get in touch. So if you let them know in advance, as I understand it, that it helps. We're going to talk about this in a moment too, as to how much to use them when a person is traveling, just because of the possibility of fraud and scams. Let's just talk about that. Exchanging money or using ATMs. Talk a little bit more about that. And also, I remember in my early days of travel, there were traveler's checks. I'm not even sure there are traveler's checks anymore, but maybe there are. So what should we know about the financial aspects of our trip?
If you're bringing a debit card, which can be a good idea, check with your home bank to see if you can use it to withdraw cash from ATMs at your destination. And some banks will even let you withdraw without additional fees. So that's nice. And you may get a better conversion rate doing it that way. Certainly, some people still use traveler's checks, and you can get those again from the AAA or American Automobile Association. But also, many people like to use cash for most purchases. And you can often get the country's currency at a local bank at your destination. If you do, though, it's very important to know what the currency is worth so you don't get taken advantage of. That's an important thing to remember. I think travelers these days have more options in terms of what type of currency to use and what they feel most comfortable using.
Once you're in the country, if you're going to be there for an extended length of time, that you can just go to the ATM machine in that country and get the money that you need, whether it's pounds or whatever. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And if you feel more comfortable, certainly you can go into the bank versus using the ATM. It may depend on language differences, what you feel most comfortable with. If you're in Europe, you might want to get some euros instead of that specific country's currency. It can be a more convenient currency to use if you're traveling around.
As the trip nears the end, you have to try to figure out, where can I spend this while I'm still in the country so I don't come back with a lot of pounds or euros or whatever it is that I was using? Sometimes it's difficult to figure out, how can I, once I get back to the United States, get rid of this money? Have you found this to be true or heard from colleagues that have that problem?
Yes, you definitely want to try your best in terms of estimating the amount of cash to take out. If you are taking out cash, trying to think in advance, maybe you take out a somewhat larger sum at the beginning, and then if you need more, you can take out a smaller sum so you're not left with a lot left over to try to spend it down. Buying lots of gelato in Rome, perhaps, at the end of your trip. Yes, that's a good thing to point out.
I remember one time we were on the way to the airport. We gave the taxi driver an extra big tip just because we figured he can certainly benefit from using that money in his country than we can back in the United States. So it was a win situation. Another thought as you're preparing for the trip is what to bring as to clothes, shoes, jewelry, electric appliances, computers or tablets or something like that. What do you advise folks as to how to prepare in that realm as they're getting ready for their trip?
These days, I think many of us have removed our shoes in the security line. struggled with whether to remove your laptop and if it needs to go in a separate bin from your shoes or if you can leave it all together. There are many different policies, and over time, these rules have changed. So you can check with the TSA website to learn more about the security check-in process for older adults. These processes may be different for older adults, and in many cases, you may not have to remove your shoes, and you may be allowed to exceed the usual limits on liquids, especially if they are medical in nature. Also, regarding luggage, there are different types of suitcases. Most of us use the rolling suitcases at this point, of course. And I have seen or heard from friends that using one's rolling suitcases with four wheels can be easier than those with two wheels. And this also is something to consider when you're in a really busy airport. You may not know exactly where you're going, and there are people all around you. You don't really want your suitcase flipping over on you, and sometimes pulling a suitcase that has three wheels on it is easier on you in terms of saving your energy and reducing the chance of tripping over your suitcase or having someone else trip over it. You also mentioned shoes, and speaking of tripping, something that I always think about is trying to just make simple choices to reduce the risk of falls. Take a moment to think about the shoes that you're packing. Make sure that they're supportive. It's helpful to have a lower heel. I know we all want to be fashionable, but if you're going somewhere with cobblestones, I think you'll be happy to have a supportive sole on your shoes that has a low heel. Clothes, you want to be comfortable, thinking about the temperature where you're heading. Also, we might talk about this later, but there are clothes now that are designed for travel and have deep zippered pockets where you can store those important documents that we were talking about earlier, like passports and IDs and cash.
What kind of jewelry should you bring, or should you bring jewelry? And we're talking about like a computer, some other kind of, as I said, maybe even a camera or this kind of thing. Although I think cameras nowadays, people usually use their phone to take pictures rather than bringing an extra camera. What about those two aspects, jewelry, electric appliances, anything else that we should know?
In regards to jewelry, it would be helpful to know, and you can check in advance to see if your hotel has a safe in the room for jewelry, as well as your passport or extra cash. Also, if you're bringing jewelry, it would be important to keep that in your carry-on bag or close to you, as opposed to packing it away in luggage that could get lost. In regards to electrical appliances, or not appliances, perhaps, we're not going to be bringing the kitchen stove with us or anything, but more like laptops, cameras. It could help with a camera to learn about any issues you might need to know regarding security checks, especially if it's more of a manual camera. Some of us do still enjoy taking black and white or artistic photography versus using the phone. And if you're going to a different country and you do have something to plug in, it would be helpful to have an adapter, which you can buy in advance, to make sure that you can use that appliance you brought and possibly schlepped across an ocean to use on your trip.
That's really important. Depending on the size of the electrical appliance, maybe not bringing along a computer would be a good idea just to enjoy the trip.
It's something that I am actually debating right now because I'm headed on a trip tomorrow and I am a bit torn about whether to bring my laptop with me or not. It is heavy and it does weigh me down. However, I can understand people not wanting to fully unplug. It's a personal choice, but certainly not bringing your computer or your work with you can really free you up to be in the moment with your family and friends and enjoy the time and experience that you're having.
You mentioned a little bit earlier about the whole aspect of health, and hopefully you stay healthy while you're there the entire trip, but especially if going to countries where there might be some issues in terms of health, let's talk a little bit about immunizations and the possibility of going to a travel clinic, especially about traveling internationally. What are your thoughts there as to checking with a travel clinic about immunizations, or is there some website that people can look at? I think you can even get travel immunizations now at urgent care clinics as well. So what information would be helpful for older travelers to know about immunizations?
It's definitely a good idea to check if you need vaccinations or even need to carry proof of a vaccination for the destination that you're visiting. There is a website, and it's actually the one I mentioned before. It really is a treasure trove of information for international travelers. It's travel.state.gov, and that page for each country or the search function where you can type in the country and it gives you a page of information. It includes vaccination requirements. And if you do need immunizations or want more information, you can find a travel clinic near you through the International Society of Travel Medicine. And their website is www.istm.org. Urgent care is also a great idea to call one near you and see if it does supply the immunizations that you need. And your physician or family doctor may also be a helpful source of information.
We just went through a pandemic a few years ago, and I'm wondering if you have any current updates about where we are on COVID now. We're still hearing about people getting COVID, albeit not as severe, because we would hope that they are vaccinated. But are immunizations required against COVID? And in all countries, and especially, of course, we've heard stories of people who ended up getting COVID and still had to be isolated. Any updates on that particular situation, since it's not going to go away?
Although the pandemic is officially over, as you said, people are still getting sick, and this can happen while you're traveling. In terms of the policies, on domestic flights, passengers are no longer required to wear masks. But COVID-19 strategies vary in different parts of the world. Your flight crew will let you know if you need to wear a mask. But even if a mask is not required, of course, you have the option to wear one. And I recommend taking some with you. You never know if you'll be seated next to someone who has a cough, and wearing a mask might just make you feel more comfortable. Or if you do happen to get sick or fall ill on your travels, the mask will definitely come in handy in that situation as well. And if you want to learn more, the CDC, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, has a wealth of travel guidance, including frequently asked questions and tools for gauging COVID-19 risk by your destination. That information can be found at cdc.gov/travel.
Let's talk about medications, where they should be carried. When traveling, are there certain rules with TSA as far as medications? And perhaps you can even go a little bit further in connection with medications. Is it a good idea to have a list of medications, bringing those along in case some kind of a health issue arises?
Yes, these are very important considerations. It's always a good idea to pack your medications in your carry-on where you can access them easily, and also where they will be safe and not in risk of getting lost if your luggage is lost by an airline. If your medication is a liquid and requires that you also have syringes, pumps, freezer packs, or IV bags, the TSA will allow you to carry it all on the plane. So before you pack, check the TSA's rules so you know how to pack them. The website that you can check for that is www.tsa.gov/travel. And to make sure things go as smoothly as possible during screening, it's a good idea to have all of your medications and medical devices labeled. And you can even carry a signed doctor's note explaining that you or your loved one's medical needs and conditions require these medications and medical devices. It's also a good idea to have a backup plan in case something goes wrong. And this includes having a list of your medications as part of your backup plan. Take that list, including your list of your medications and your doctors, and also look in advance for the location of a nearby pharmacy if you can, especially if you're traveling domestically. It's much easier to identify a pharmacy that's covered by your insurance or Medicare. Traveling internationally, traveler's insurance, as I mentioned, often includes a hotline. You can call 24 hours a day to find a pharmacy. But having that list of your medications can really help if you do lose a medication in that event that we all would certainly hope does not happen.
One thing I would add, since I have a nursing background, I always remember this kind of information a little bit more, is so many medications now go by the generic name rather than the brand name. And I personally even get confused sometimes that as to what kind of medication I'm taking, because it is being labeled by the generic name. And if you travel overseas and you go to a pharmacy, there might be a different brand name or even a generic name. I don't know always how that works. The other thing is the dosage. I think that's really important to know what your dosage is, because if you talk with someone again in another country and you say, gee, I only need 5 milligrams and all they have is 50 milligrams, you may have to go to another pharmacy. Keeping that in mind as to what medications you're taking is really important. But that other part, the brand name, take even the little insert that you get with your medication so that you can share that with the pharmacist so you don't end up with something that was similar or looked similar and this kind of thing. Anything else to add there, Emily?
I think these details are very important, and it's important for a pharmacist or doctor to know. Also, sometimes medications can cause side effects that could lead to a fall, as I had talked about before. So knowing the specific dosage and, of course, the correct medication, the actual name versus a generic type name.
Moving on to some other aspects in preparation is global entry and TSA PreCheck. Can you give us a little tutorial as the difference between those two when you get to the airport? Are there special security requirements for older travelers?
Yeah, if you're 75 or older, TSA usually allows you to go through the security pre-check line, which means you don't have to remove your shoes or separate laptops or liquids from your carry-on. For those younger than 75 who can't or don't want to stand in long security lines, the TSA pre-check or global entry program are options. TSA PreCheck is for flights between U.S. airports, and Global Entry is for international flights. Each program has a non-refundable application fee, but you do have to apply for the program well in advance of your travel, so keep that in mind. However, if you are approved when you apply, your status lasts for 5 years. So this could be especially helpful for people who travel often, or for people who just know that they could really benefit from what these two programs have to offer when they're traveling.
And quite frankly, be sure and take a look when you get Global Entry, and I can speak from experience, as to see when it does expire, because it's easy to renew online prior to that expiration date. However, if it expires, then you have to go through much more rigmarole, as I'd like to say, as to getting it renewed. So be sure and check any expiration date in terms of global entry and TSA pre-check. We're now at the airport, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are, especially if an older traveler has a chronic condition or special dietary needs, depending on how that airline reservation was made, either through the travel company or by themselves. Is it a good idea to mention to the airline where you're going to be traveling about this chronic condition? Maybe they need oxygen or special dietary needs. What can older travelers do to make sure that it's a hassle-free time while they're on the airline, especially if it's going to be a very long trip?
The Transportation Security Administration, which we've been referring to as TSA, their website, TSA Cares, has resources for passengers with disabilities and medical conditions, so you can prepare ahead of time for those security lines. But you can also call the TSA Cares call center if you feel more comfortable than looking online or in addition to it. Their phone number is 855-787-2227. You could also send them an email. Make sure, though, to reach out at least 72 hours before your departure. And you'll want to talk with the airline, your specific airline, if you have a chronic condition that has dietary restrictions, such as diabetes, high cholesterol, or hypertension. If you're taking a long flight that would involve having meals on the plane. A representative from your airline could tell you if they can accommodate your dietary needs. And certainly, if they can't, then plan to pack some food for yourself.
And let's talk a little bit more about chronic condition. Perhaps a traveler might need a wheelchair when they get left off at the door to the gate. Any information you can provide as to getting a wheelchair if a person needs it, so that they don't have to walk so far, especially if they've got a lot of luggage.
Even if you or your loved one is healthy and mobile, some gates can be a really long way from the security checkpoint. The U.S. Department of Transportation requires that airlines provide wheelchair assistance to and from your gate, between gates for connecting flights, and also to the baggage claim. So you should absolutely ask for wheelchair assistance. It is a required thing that airlines must offer. So you can request wheelchair assistance when you arrive at the airport, but you can also arrange for it earlier. You can call the airline's customer service number or request help online when you book your tickets to arrange that. And also make sure to request assistance at the other end of your flight, too.
And one nice thing about that often is that you get to get on the airplane first, so there is an advantage. And obviously, you're not going to take advantage of that situation, but it does help to get on first and a little settled and perhaps even work with the flight attendant to make sure everything is all set and get that wheelchair off before other passengers get on. So it's really important to think about that. I've known people who had to get that wheelchair assistance, and it was very important, and it helped to make it more hassle-free. So let's move now. We're getting to the point where we're on the other end, the destination. What should travelers consider before booking a hotel? And again, we're talking about the possibility of special needs or requiring specific types of accessibility. What kinds of things should people think about as they consider which type of hotel they want to stay in?
Before booking a hotel, it's a great idea to call ahead and make sure that the hotel has elevators if you need it. And also check if that elevator is wheelchair accessible. If not, you can also ask that they accommodate a first floor request. If you're arranging your own travel and using room or hotel booking website like Vrbo, V-R-B-O, or Airbnb. Those sites now allow you to select or filter options related to accessibility to tailor your vacation home search or hotel search to your needs. So it's great to see that hotels are thinking about these things as they should be. Even if you're traveling with a tour company, don't hesitate to call that hotel that might have been arranged for you. Call them directly if you have concerns about accessibility. And then once you're at your destination, do a safety sweep to remove or address potential hazards in the hotel room or vacation home. It could be a good idea to pick up any throw rugs, which could be a trip hazard, or cords from floor lamps that might be in walking paths. I personally like to pack a nightlight when I travel to make sure that I can safely get to the bathroom in the dark. It's an unfamiliar place, and I don't want to stub my toe or trip on something. It's just comforting and nice in addition to increasing safety. And then just when you're out and about at your destination, carting around luggage can be easy to trip over. Again, walking on cobblestones, just thinking about your shoes, wearing proper eyeglasses, holding handrails if you're getting on and off a bus or a train, and really taking your time. It's a new and unfamiliar place, and sometimes even distraction can cause a trip or a fall. So things to keep in mind to avoid injury in the hotel and outside as well.
Speaking of inside the hotel as well as out, another aspect we really need to worry about is theft and fraud and being taken advantage of when you least expect it, whether you're on a tour or by yourself, because even on tours, sometimes people have free time to enjoy the sights. Give us a list of precautions that will really be helpful to ensure that you're not a target for theft and fraud. What should older adults know in that regard?
Cheryl, like you said, theft can happen when you're alone or even when you're with a group. So it's important to take precautions to protect yourself, both inside and outside of your hotel room. When you're in your hotel, as I had mentioned before, you can check to see if there's a safe in your room for valuables. And always double check to make sure that the code works before putting your belongings inside. It's a great idea to just keep anything that you consider valuable inside the safe. And then also consider investing in pickpocket-proof travel clothes. So these are clothes like pants or jackets that come with deep inside zipper pockets or magnetically sealed pockets. And this can help keep your valuables safe from pickpocketers. You can also wear a pouch or kind of like flat streamlined bag or pouch around your neck, and this can go under your clothes. You want to make sure that you are aware of keeping any bags or possessions in your line of sight, holding them in front of you or on your lap if you're seated, as opposed to a fanny pack that's on your back versus on the front, and as opposed to putting a bag down on the floor of a bus or train. You would want to keep that in your lap and be aware of your surroundings as well.
I think I would add in that regard that oftentimes, and I certainly do this myself, is that I carry a purse that has a long enough strap so that rather than just putting it on my shoulder, I can put it over my head and across my chest so that it's next to my hip if I don't have one of those types of clothing you are mentioning. But I can't emphasize enough, oftentimes men carry their wallets in their pocket in the back, and that is such a possibility for getting it stolen, and you just really have to be careful. And so I would caution both our men and women listeners that getting those special kinds of clothing or whatever where you've got things in front of you, because it can happen so quickly. I would even also mention that I knew of a couple number of years ago who rented a car, and they really needed to be cautious about putting items in the car that they rented, because quite frankly, somebody broke into their car, stole all of their luggage, and that was the end of their trip because everything was gone. So if you are traveling either by train or by a bus or by a car that you rent, those are aspects that to think about in terms of how you keep your possessions safe, not only those that you're carrying personally, but your luggage as well, because this is the time when theft is probably at its height because this is a new experience. So I would definitely add that. We mentioned about healthcare services before, but now that somebody is in the country itself, can you add anything as to what travelers should know about healthcare services if they're needed? Like somehow they have some symptom while they're in their hotel room or while they're taking a tour with a group. Any special recommendations that people can think about, either if they're by themselves or with a tour group?
I would say that it's important to speak up if you are not feeling well or just not feeling right. If you're with friends or family members, let them know and see if they can identify help. If you're alone, then if there's a tour guide, let them know. If you're in a hotel, contact the front desk. Some hotels have nurses on staff or can connect you with a nurse or other medical assistants. And if you have travel insurance, again, those 24/7 travel assistance lines could help you in terms of finding health services as well.
And you also mentioned, and I think it's worthwhile to reemphasize about the fact that Medicare cannot be used outside the United States, and that if they needed to pay, it would either be travel insurance or they probably might even have to pay out of pocket. Do you agree?
Yes, certainly without travel insurance, you would be paying out of pocket. But if you do have travel medical insurance, then that would provide healthcare coverage while you travel. And this includes ambulance services, doctor and hospital bills, and other medical expenses. So it would be helpful to familiarize yourself with the travel medical insurance information and how that works in advance, just in the case that you do end up not feeling well or needing medical services while you're away.
And I think I would add again that in the event that there was a need for some kind of trip to a healthcare provider, that you've got that list of medications with you, because somebody might need to go someplace and be taken either to a hospital or to a physician, and that physician or other healthcare provider is not going to have any idea as to what kind of medications that you're taking. And if you don't tell them in advance of what prescriptions you have, or either non-prescriptions over the counter, that can be quite dangerous sometimes, depending on what injury or your situation is. So this is really important as well. Do you have anything to add, Emily?
And I do. I think this also brings in that the importance of carrying that emergency contact information with you while you're out and about. This way, if people are providing assistance, they have that information. They know your emergency contacts to share with the people who are helping you, and also how to get in touch with people at home.
Good advice, because if you end up being unconscious, maybe you fell or you had a stroke or something like that, again, it's really important to be carrying that emergency contact information with you at all times. Let's talk a little bit about food and water. These are really aspects that you go to another country, and sometimes people have conditions that can be really prevent you from really enjoying the trip. And also about tap water versus bottled water. What do we need to know about making sure that our diets will, and the food we eat and the water we drink will be okay, and we won't end up staying in your hotel room because you can't go anywhere.
There are precautions that you can take to avoid food poisoning or just an upset stomach. There are certain countries where the water may be contaminated or where there might be different types of things in the water that our systems are not used to. And in those cases, do not drink the tap water. You should also avoid using ice and drink bottled water in those cases. There's actually a great list that gets into specifics related to foods to avoid and then foods to look out for in certain situations in these countries. This list is on the CDC's website, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, basically explains what types of foods are safer than others. And this list can be found on www.cdc.gov/travel. But that's definitely something to think about. The last thing you would want to do is feel ill while traveling.
I have a little case that I bring with me that has things like Pepto-Bismol or something that can help in case of diarrhea or the other thing, constipation. There are so many factors that occur during a trip, and it's better to have brought those little medications in some kind of a plastic case that you can grab them quickly and you're familiar with them and they haven't expired. Also, something to remember is if you go to countries with high altitudes, sometimes you can end up getting a headache because of the high altitude if you're in a mountainous region. I speak from experience here. The headache can be so bad, but sometimes you need something stronger, even something that you take for a migraine because the headaches are so bad. But so many kind of situations can arise, and you just need to be prepared for everything. And Emily, anything to add on that?
Yes, I can definitely relate. Sometimes I feel like I'm packing a pharmacy's worth of medications and things, but I can say that I have never regretted packing those things, but there have been times when I really regretted not bringing them along with me. So it's a great idea to have them on hand if you need them.
If you need something quickly, it's always more comforting to take something that you're familiar with and that you bought yourself rather than trying to, at this time when you're not feeling well, go to some local pharmacy where you don't know exactly where they are and you go and look on the shelf and you can't read the labels. So to have something with you that you are comfortable taking and have taken before is really helpful. I also wanted to talk a little bit yet about older adults are traveling more. Maybe to think about something like downtime or travel times between destinations and locations, hotel locations away from noise. Again, it's a different environment. And to think about these aspects too, would you agree that those are also important to think about before and anticipate as you're preparing your trip?
Yes, as fun as traveling can be, it can also be tiring. It's a great idea when you're booking flights to make sure that there's an adequate amount of time if you have a layover to be able to switch from one plane to another and find that gate that you need. Also have adequate time to just physically to get from one gate to another. Some airports have quiet rooms, or you could find a quiet place off the beaten path to just take a moment to breathe and relax before you continue on the next leg of your trip. And as you mentioned with hotels, certainly looking at the inside for accessibility features is important. But if the hotel is in a very loud area, it may not be as comfortable as you'd hoped. I guess there's a balance between having a hotel that is somewhat central, so you're not left to walk long distances or have to use a taxi or ride share to get everywhere you need to be, but find a place that is not very loud and very crowded if you are looking for a restful and relaxing trip.
I would even add that sometimes it might be worthwhile to put in a pair of earplugs. I'm a very light sleeper, and so going to hotels where the guests in the next room are playing their TV until 3 o'clock in the morning or having a party or the kids are running up and down the hall. So bringing along a pair of earplugs, or I guess it would be a little difficult to do something that has white noise, but the earplugs at least might be helpful. Trust me, I've sort of done it all, and so I can throw in a lot of my own experiences as well. So we're just about out of time here, Emily, and so I just wanted to ask you one final question. You've mentioned so many excellent resources, and just wanted to find out if you wanted to reiterate any that were especially important that folks can check out before they plan that next trip. And any final comments?
Sure. Well, I definitely recommend the website travel.state.gov. This one has tips on safety and security, your health while traveling, vaccinations, how to be ready in case of emergencies, and more. This is the website that has that search feature where you can enter the name of the country you'll visit, and it will share alerts and passport, visa, and vaccination requirements. Another website I'd mentioned is www.tsa.gov/travel, and that can help with things related to the airport and the different kinds of security check-in programs that we discuss. The Centers for Disease Control also have their travel webpage, www.cdc.gov/travel. And you could look up AARP and the American Automobile Association also have some helpful travel resources.
I would also add one final comment, and that is that before you leave home, make sure that you stop your newspaper if you're still getting it, and the mail. It's another one that I always try to remember. Emily, we want to thank you. This has just been fabulous. And Emily Nabors, the Senior Program Specialist with the Center for Healthy Aging at the National Council on Aging, has really provided a lot of helpful information. So thank you, Emily, for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay. Now, and if you want to learn about aging matters just in general, of course, you should check out our website, which is agingmattersonline.com. And on the podcast page, you can see all of the podcasts that we've done, as well as earlier radio shows. And on the TV show episode page, you can see the TV episodes. And on the site itself, you can check out Apple and Spotify. So remember, agingmattersonline.com. Aging Matters is produced in association with Steve Lack Audio. To learn more about his company, log on to stevelackaudio.com. Thank you for listening to Aging Matters today. And remember, age is just a number, not a label. I'll be back again with you next week. Seabury Resources for Aging is a proud partner of Aging Matters. As a nonprofit, Seabury serves older adults in the Washington, D.C. region and across the United States with its care management model to support caregivers and their loved ones. Seabury is a pioneer in the field of services for older adults, providing affordable housing and support services to help older adults age in place. For more information, visit their website, seaburyresources.org, or call them at 202-289-5690.